Want to make mom's day? Get to your Nordstrom Rack now and score amazing deals for Mother's Day, which is Sunday, May 12th. Find tons of gifts from only $30 at Nordstrom Rack. Fragrance, jewelry, luxury bags, activewear, beauty, and more. Save on Kate Spade New York, Stuart Weitzman, and Ted Baker London. Great brands, great prices. So shop your Nordstrom Rack store today and treat mom to the good stuff from just $30.
If scary movies give you dread, keep you up late night in bed, here's a podcast that will help you ease your mind. We'll explain the plot real nicely, then we'll talk about what's frightening so you never have to have a spooky time. It's Ruined.
Hello, welcome to Ruined. I'm Hallie.
And I'm Allison.
This is a podcast. We ruin a horror movie just for you.
Just for all of you. Hallie, how are you?
You know, it's hard to know. which part I love working in the entertainment industry more. Is it the glitz or is it the glamour? If you had to pick between the two, what would you pick?
Wow. If glitz is the intense compression of the industry thanks to like 12 rich white men who are draining everybody of every job opportunity and penny that they have, and the glam is people signing a letter against a very humanitarian speech calling for the end of a genocide. I don't know. They're both so appealing.
It is so funny to what we thought about this industry as children when obviously, you know, clearly we thought about that. Like, people who wanted to work in entertainment as kids. Yeah. And then to arrive here, it's like, well, I thought there would be a lot more stretch limousines. And
I thought there would at least be regular paychecks.
Oh, jeez. I didn't even think about health insurance, and that's on us. You know what I mean?
Oh, God. Yeah, right. That's terrible.
But yeah, also I was talking about the letter signed against Jonathan Glazer's Oscar acceptance speech, which I guess the only value of that is like, well, not that many people signed it. And also, like, I think we're running up at the end of, like, come on, guys. We all heard the speech. We know what he was saying.
Right. For those who didn't see it and, like, took it out of context, like, it has been contextualized what he was saying and, like, the grammatical, like, intentional misinterpretation of it is clearly incorrect.
Right.
I did see that I think it's Variety that's been, like, tweeting about it and being like, this many people have signed this. And it feels like they're constantly, like, well, now it's over 1,000 people have signed. Mm-hmm. It turns out at the bottom of their article, there is a opportunity to sign it.
Yeah, that makes
which
sense.
Is disgusting. So that part sucks, but yeah. I'll say, like, you know, the disgusting money grabbing, not giving a shit about making anything, also bad.
Yeah, not good. Not good, guys. I just say it's because we're recording this at 7 a.m. Before I go to my other job.
Yeah.
You know, again, not that everyone should have just one job. You know, obviously that's too much to ask in any industry.
Just work till we die. Yeah.
But, yeah, just top of mind, the glitz or the glam. Because you get both either way. You're getting both either way.
Oh, hello. It's Hallie here to tell you about our next Ruin live show, which will be Sunday, April 28th at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific. And the movie we're doing is, of course, Immaculate, starring the one and only Sydney Sweeney. If you'd like to join us again on Sunday, April 28th, please get your ticket at moment.co/ruined. We'll have merch. It is our old merch, but it will be there. Of course, we'll have new merch one day, but that day will not be Sunday, April 28th, when we will be ruining Immaculate. So please join us again. You can get your tickets at moment.co/ruined. Hope to see you there.
We, of course, are doing another movie in our 6 degrees of seven bacon month.
6 degrees of seven bacon.
Oh, God. 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon. I call him Seven Bacon. It's an inside joke between me and him. And I finally did find the site, which you were right, Allison. It's still functional. God. In case anyone wants to calculate 6 degrees from Kevin Bacon.
Okay.
It's called The Oracle of Bacon. And I honest to God, and this is a testament. This was created in 1999. This is how good the early internet is. Like, it's sort of like a house that's built an older house has better bones than, like, these shitty fucking plywood-ass, like, flipper houses. This site is, I don't even understand how they put it together. I don't know how this is possible, but it is functional.
Yes.
You know,
early
decades
internet.
Later.
Websites.
And, of course, we've, exactly, like, websites. What was wrong with websites?
We don't have, like, all I have is, like, places I buy stuff from and places I see hate speech. That's, like, the only, and Wordle.
And feel bad about your body.
Yeah.
So we are doing a movie this week. It is An American Werewolf in London. It is.
We're doing in London?
Yes, we're going to do in London. We'll do Paris later, as Paris is a follow-up.
You wrote Paris in the email, so I watched the trailer for Paris.
So that's fine. I mean, there are similarities in them, so...
I had a guess for, like, what some of the degrees of Kevin Bacon were from that film.
I got bad news, because this was a lot harder.
Okay. Because that's, like, newer. So I was like, oh, yes. Thomas Everett Scott, he was in That Thing You Do, and Tom Hanks was in that movie. And I'm sure Tom Hanks was in a movie with Kevin Bacon, or
Julie Delpy was in that movie, and so she was with Ethan Hawke, which then opens a lot of doors through Ethan Hawke, and her as well. No, we're doing, American Werewolf in London.
Okay.
I think I was going to do Paris, and then I switched it, so I think I was still typing it. I apologize. Here's some film stars. I'm going to read to you. This is a 1981 film directed by John Landis. I'm going to read you the stars, and then you tell me how you think it's connected to Kevin Bacon. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Okay. John Woodvine, Griffin Dunn, Jenny Ugutter, and David Naughton. I know these are big names, so there's a lot of different options here, Allison.
I feel like Griffin Dunn.
Okay. And how do you think they're connected?
I don't know.
I know you don't. I didn't know either. But here, I'm putting in the calculator. He's actually connected through two people.
Okay.
So Griffin Dunn, he was in a movie called Almost You with an actress called Karen Young. And then Karen Young was in Criminal Law with a young Kevin Bacon. And then David Naughton, I believe. Boop, boop, boop. He was in Out of the Wilderness with Peter Jason and was in a film called Mr. Roberts with Kevin Bacon. Thank you, The Oracle of Bacon. I never would have known any of these movies, so I really appreciate
it. Thank you, early internet.
Also, I realized Kevin Bacon, is he in Mystic River, or am I thinking of someone else? He is in that. So that's also good to know. Yeah. Like, I mean, that's everybody. Oh, Lawrence Fishburne, Tim Robbins, Sean Penn, Marsha Gay Harden. Yeah. Yes.
That's a helpful one.
Yeah, and that makes sense. It's like that and, what was it? I Heart Huckabees.
A Few Good Men.
Yes. Oh, yeah. A Few Good Men. Listen, he's a movie star. There's a reason that this works.
Yeah, he's been in a lot. This is the thing, because he's been in a lot of huge movies with lots of other stars.
Yeah, absolutely. So we are going to ruin this movie. We always like to have Allison watch the trailer, except in this case I have fucked up and told her an American Werewolf in Paris when it's in fact American Werewolf in London. But imagine the events of that movie was happening in London. And what are your
switching
thoughts,
Eiffel
Allison?
Tower for Big Ben.
Yes.
Done. Got it. Paris one is 1997. It's very of like the disturbing behavior, like that era. This I don't feel like is the same. But werewolves in general, not that scary to me, because they're so not real.
Right.
Like, I feel like when we talk about like certain paranormal stuff, there's like an uncertainty to it where I'm like, I know it's not real, but if somehow someone was able to prove it, I'd be like, okay. Right. But, like, I know werewolves aren't real.
Yeah. I guess it's, like, if it was real, it would be, like, a biological process that we would be able to, like, understand and potentially medicate or something. Like, it's not supernatural in the way, say, a ghost or a demon.
Exactly.
It's like, okay, you become a big dog. It seems like we could get our hands around that somehow.
It doesn't look like a dog or a wolf, like, in any of the iterations I've seen of werewolves. So it's, like... Oh, if someone saw that, we would know that that was real. Like, we would have seen those around.
Yes, though I suppose we're to think that in moments of shock, people assume it's a dog or a wolf or something, even though we've all seen dogs and wolves, and this is very much not that.
No, not at all.
Which brings us to our baseline scary, which we'd like to have Allison let us know where she's at with it. How scary do you find the concept of backpacking through Europe with your college friend?
Awful. Never did it. Never would have.
The most horrifying part of this, so like, these guys are just... on the side of the road in northern England in the rain trying to find a place to stay. It's
like
absolutely
a backpack of like clothes and like granola bar. No, I studied abroad and I like lived in a hotel in Paris. I am not one for backpacking for kind of like, we'll see what happens. Like I like a real hotel. I like planned travel. I don't mind going for long walks.
Sure.
But also, what really chills me to my core is the group of 20-somethings figuring it out element of backpacking with your friends in college. Like, no.
And they also make, like, you see a scene and they kind of make it clear that, at one point you see one of the guys, it's two guys, their younger siblings, and the sister's like 10. And that would bum me out. I'm like, oh yeah, ooh, they're little. I mean, obviously yeah, the actors are older, but there's like about a child sibling that I remember from college that I'm like, oh, I feel bad about these guys either turning into or being murdered by werewolves.
Yeah.
And then finally, would you like to guess the twist in An American Werewolf in London?
Guess the twist.
Would you say there's a twist, or is it?
I would say this is perhaps the twistless, most twistless movie we've ever done. It yeah, is simply a werewolf movie. It's great. I really enjoyed it. But no, there's not going to be any last minute surprises. It's yeah, going to be werewolves.
Pretty straightforward. Even mm-hmm, the one in Paris, is. You watch the trailer, you're like, there's no way this ends differently than exactly what I thought.
Yeah.
But I'm going to go out on a limb and guess that the werewolves survive and then move to America, ooh, and become Air Bud.
Love it. Right, because there is no rule in the rule book saying that a werewolf can't play basketball.
Exactly.
Famously.
Well, I guess that's Teen Wolf, literally.
Oh my God. We should do Teen Wolf.
We should do Teen Wolf.
All right, let us begin ruining An American Werewolf in London.
London.
Another great thing about this movie is that all of the soundtrack is really on the nose. So we open with Bobby Vinton's Blue Moon as perfect, we look over sort of the misty moors of England. I guess it was shot in Wales. Beautiful. Also, this is the first movie to win the Academy Award for Best Makeup for the transformations. Oh. Obviously, that's there's cool, been other technical awards, but this, that was makeup the first specific, actual Oscar for Best Makeup. And that was run by the makeup guy, Rick Baker. Shout out to him. It is the best part, I think.
Go,
and we'll get to why it was so well done. So we see a British sheep farmer driving a truck full of sheep down a road. He stops and he takes down the back gate, revealing our main character, David Kessler and Jack Goodman. They are American college students backpacking across the UK. Ostensibly, I'm not exactly sure, but I'm assuming for the summer. So it is summertime, but you're in northern England. It's torrentially raining. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. They're in jackets and they're bundled up. The farmer lets them out and he says, stay away from the moors. And whatever you do, boys, stick to the roads. Good luck to you.
Good advice.
We find out they're on a 3-month backpacking tour of Europe. They're going to start there and they're going to end up down in Italy. Jack is worried about meeting up with this girl they know from college named Debbie, who he's trying to have sex with. He's like, do you think she'll actually meet us in Rome? And he's like, oh, she's just a jerk. He's like, well, I have to make love to her, but she says she likes me too much. I'm like, man, college is confusing.
It is a weird time.
David says, I don't know why you're worried about girls. We're going to meet plenty of girls on this trip. Meanwhile, there's not even a building. Like, they're in the middle of, like, where will these girls be? What are you talking about? So they find themselves walking towards the nearest town, which does sound really, like, it's so cute and quaint as night starts to fall. The town is East Proctor, and they find the one pub in town, the Slaughtered Lamb. And Jack is immediately sort of distressed by the, you know, they have sort of an old-timey sign with a slaughtered lamb on it for the pub. He's like, what the hell is that? Why would you make that? Whatever happens in here is your fault. David said it's going to be fine. And they walk into the pub, which is full of presumably every man in town or the nearby area. And everyone falls silent and looks at them. But of course, they're like, oh, great. They hate Americans.
Yeah.
So they sit down. It's getting cold outside. And they find a table. They order from the barmaid who kind of gives them the runaround. Like, oh, what do you want? We don't have anything. But finally agrees to make them tea. All of the locals are still staring at them, whispering. And Jack and David see on the wall there is a 5-pointed star, which in my mind is a pentagram. They call it a pentangle. Yes. I guess the same thing. Yep. And Jack's like, what the fuck is this? Why is that on the wall? He says, you know, in the old Universal movies, that's the mark of the Wolfman. And then he starts looking around. There's all these candles lit. He's like, why are all these candles around? Finally, one of the locals, like, breaks the ice, is kind of, like, chatting with them. He ends up telling a really long story about a Brit, a Frenchman, and a Mexican on an airplane that's starting to go down, so they need to throw out all the luggage. Allison, they throw out all the luggage. It's not enough. The plane is still going to crash. So one by one, the Frenchman says, I will sacrifice myself, says, Vive la France, and jumps off the plane to his death. The Brit's next. He says, long live the Queen, and the Brit jumps out of the plane to his death. And the American says, remember the Alamo. And he pushes the Mexican out the plane. And everyone laughs hysterically.
Yes.
And so the guys, like, oh, the Jack and Dave are like, ha, ha, ha. And then Jack says, hey, what's that star on the wall? And everyone falls silent. It's like, you guys
you
are
never
bad.
Want that.
But also, like, the guys in this village, like, you're doing a bad job of playing it cool. Like, you should have discussed what you do if somebody showed up. You can't act this crazy, you know?
Right. It's like, I guess even, like, if you're in a remote town, like, you're like, no one's ever going to come here. But, like, you should be prepared that one day they might.
Right, exactly. Like, Americans are going to trundle through. And when he says it, it startles this guy who's playing darts. And he misses. He says, you made me miss. I've never missed the board before. By now, Jack and David are picking up on the insane vibe, and they're like, actually, you know what? We're going to head out. Thanks so much, everybody. Clearly, we stepped into something that's not ours.
Yeah.
And they go to leave, and the barmaid turns and sort of beseeches the men and says, for God's sakes, you can't just let them leave. But the joke teller says, nope, good luck, lads, and may God be with you. And the dart player turns and says, stick to the roads, avoid the moors, and beware the moon, lads. Allison, how does one even begin to be aware of the moon? What would that mean?
I mean, it's even during the day, it's sometimes still around. Like, it's hard to avoid the moon.
It's just there. How do you beware of it?
It's just there. I guess you stay inside?
Well, unfortunately, they don't. They walk out, weirded out, obviously, and they say, well, we'll see if there's an inn, and if not, we'll walk to the next town. I don't know what's going on there. Inside, the conversation's like, but now the barmaid and the dart player are like, well, shit, we can't just let them walk around out there. That's murder. And the joke teller says, then it's murder. You want everyone in the world to know our business? Of course, unfortunately, as Jack and David start walking, it starts pouring rain.
Great.
So in order to go to the next town, they start cutting across the moors. The one thing they were told not to do. Well,
stay away from the moors and also the moon.
Beware of it. They're not being very aware of it, I'll say that much. And Jack's like, well, maybe that pentangle was for some local religion or superstition. Maybe they were embarrassed or something, and they didn't want, you know, outsiders poking around. And they're just kind of laughing. They sing the song Santa Lucia, and we keep cutting back to them and the pub. And the barmaid says, as the sound of rain sets on the pub, she's like, well, maybe they'll be safe because of the rain. Maybe we should have told them of what's out there. But the dart player says, no, they would think that we're mad. And from outside, Allison, the howl of a wolf. And the barmaid, to her credit, also
are
like,
wolves native? Around there?
That's a great question. Are wolves
like where are
native
wolves
to UK? Well, we've got them.
We've got them. And I feel like they're also like in like Russia. I think of like Siberian husky. Like I think about like northern kind of Eurasia.
Yeah, so I guess they are in Europe, like Germany and stuff, but they are extinct in the UK. So they're having the same thing, like, actually interesting, like, Colorado introduced wolves, and there was a big hubbub because in Wyoming you can hunt them all the time. So it's, and like, Wyoming hunters were calling them, using, like, electronic calls to call the wolves in Wyoming and shooting them, which doesn't give me a very high respect for Wyoming, if I'm totally honest.
Nope.
And so I guess this is from last June. Britain, they're having the same argument as should we reintroduce lynx and wolves? And it is a problem because when you have predators and you have livestock and you have pets, you know, it just sort of like how do you decide when to do that? But they think that there were wolves or there were wolves in the UK earlier. They were just hunted to extinction.
Okay.
Seemingly, let's see, by the 1500s, according to Wolves.live, a friendly, reputable site.
Definitely a real website.
Google. Thanks,
not
Google.
Not phishing at all.
I'll appreciate it. I did think recently, I was like, boy, are the times when Google isn't working, is that just when they don't want us to be able to Google certain news? And I know that sounds like a conspiracy theory, but also there's literally no way for us to know. So maybe try Bing if you're running into problems. See what they think happens, if there's any difference. Unfortunately, they don't tell those guys, so they are just now walking in the moors, hearing a wolf howling. And she says, don't you hear that howling? You must go to them. And the dart player says,
I heard nothing. Not I.
So they know what's going to happen. They're going to let these guys walk into it. Outside, the rain sort of lets up. The guys are soaking wet. And Jack starts panicking about the obvious wolf howls, you know?
Yeah.
And he's saying, like, oh, my God, they told us about the moon. There's a full moon. Maybe that's when the wolves are hunting. Are we just walking into a wolf pack? A great question. And now we're off the road. So, like, now we're walking in their territory. He says, fuck this. Who cares if those people are freaks? Let's just go back to the slaughtered lamb and see if they'll just let us stay there. That's fine, you know?
Yeah.
Unfortunately, they start to go back, and it's beginning to get foggy. So, of course, they are completely lost. It is pitch dark out there. They don't even have a flashlight. and they hear what sounds like a gigantic animal circling them, howling and panting and moaning. And David says, we have to keep moving. The animal is stalking them, Allison. So as they walk and they start to sort of break into a run, obviously the creature's staying with them. And
have you ever been followed by an animal?
No, that would be so terrifying. Have you?
Me neither. No.
Yeah. There was a cougar, I think, that was hunted like five mountain bikers or was stalking them. Terrifying,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well, yeah, there's a lot, and there's like a lot of like mountain lions and stuff going on out where you are.
Oh, and a mountain lion could tear me my ass up immediately. Yeah. I'd be dead.
You need one of those vests that they put on small dogs.
Also, like, what a fun look, you know?
Neon pink spikes, that could be your look.
Allison, they stop dead and they realize that the creature has circled and is now in front of them. And they're like, well, maybe it's just a dog, a sheepdog. And they pivot and they just sort of start walking rapidly before breaking into a run. David trips and falls because it's pitch fucking dark out there. And when Jack bends to help him, a wolf attacks Jack, gets him on the ground, and tears out his throat as he screams. And David gets up and he instinctively starts running away.
Yes.
As we all like, would.
Once somebody's throat's been ripped out by an animal, like, there's nothing I'm going to be able to do to save them.
No, but David's a good guy, so he does stop and is like, fuck, and he has to run back around. And when he gets to Jack, who seems to be dead already, but he gets to him, the wolf lunges at David, but is only able to wound him. He claws him in the face before a gunshot rings out, and we realize the townspeople have come to the rescue a little too late. And when the wolf falls to the ground, we see that it's actually a naked, bloody, dying white man. Which always makes me think of, there's a meme from New Girl of Max Greenfield talking to a little girl who says, a white man tried to break in today. And he goes, a white man? No! And that was David's reaction. It's not a dog at all. It's a man who's now dead. David wakes up 3 weeks later at a hospital in London. And he gasps awake and he says, Jack. Or as they say in London.
Wait, David was the one who was attacked?
Yeah, so David has been clawed. He's been attacked, but he is still alive. Jack, unfortunately, dead. Dead as a doornail.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah, so we will just be with David from now on. He's being awoken by Nurse Alex, who tests his pupils. Another nurse stops it and says, you know, I think he's a Jew. And Alex goes, well, why? Why do you think that is his name? And she says, well, I had a look. I'm like, Jesus. I'm sending the werewolf to the HR, ladies. You're going to have to deal with the werewolf. Okay, oof. The sexual harassment. The early 80s.
Wasn't that long ago.
Yeah, I was like, damn, girl. Oof. You're staying in front of him. The doctor, Dr. Hirsch, comes in and tells the nurses to get the fucking lost. But not before asking, like, did he say anything when he came to? Because now, like, David's, like, awake, but he's kind of in and out of it. And this is the first time he's spoken in 3 weeks. And he says, well, you know, he and his traveling companion, Jack Goodman, they were apparently attacked by a lunatic. They were attacked by a man who killed Jack and wounded David. So the party line, which we find out is supported by the village, is that this was some guy. It was a serial killer or somebody who lost his mind, killed these guys.
Yeah.
And interestingly, we cut to, as David sort of falls back to sleep, we see POV of him running through the woods. You know, his first sort of animalistic dreams occurring to him. David opens his eyes again and he meets Dr. Hirsch. And an American, Mr. Collins, from the American Embassy, here to check in on him. And he's played by Frank Oz. And Frank Oz's speaking voice does sound like Kermit. It's a less Kermity Kermit, but it is Kermit.
But it's still Kermity.
So if you want to mention that Mr. Collins is played by Kermit, that's completely reasonable.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Oh. It's like, I can't really do called your parents. No, that's pretty good. So he tells him, we've contacted your parents and let Jack's parents know. His body was already taken back to America. But you're going to be fine. You know, you're in good hands here. But of course, David's like, well, yeah, it wasn't a man. It was an animal. An animal killed Jack. And he starts panicking as they sort of try to calm him down. He's like, this isn't possible. Like, how could have something like that have killed Jack? Like, and Alex runs over to give him a sedative, classic hospital the movie move. And he starts to calm down. Mr. Collins says, just so you know, the police will be by to question you later. But before David drifts off to sleep, he tells Nurse Alex and Dr. Hirsch, I'm telling you, it wasn't a lunatic. It was a wolf. Back in his office, Dr. Hirsch greets the cops, which are Sergeant McManus, who's a complete dumbass and has some like great moments of physical comedy. And I just appreciate a movie where it's like, just one of the cops is like constantly knocking stuff over.
Great. Yeah, that's great.
So funny. The other one is Inspector Villiers. And at one point, Sergeant McManus leans against the bar cart. Because you know in the 80s, your doctor had to have a bar cart in his office?
Yeah, you know how there's just like never enough liquor in hospitals these days?
And McManus leans against the bar cart and knocks everything to the ground. And then has to like...
Oh my God, what a disaster.
It's so good. And so he has to like pick everything up and put it back. He didn't break anything, but it's just like all the metal things and the tongs. Yeah. They're all just watching him before they start talking. Again, David's telling Nurse Alex, I wasn't attacked by a man. I don't know who said that. Also, look at my wounds. Like, I have a claw mark on my healing on my face. I have a huge claw mark on my chest. It obviously wasn't some guy.
Yeah.
And McManus is talking to, the cops are talking to Hirsch, and McManus says, you know, based on the strength a man would have, it is insane. Like, he tore that guy's throat out. He attacked two adult men and savaged them. That it does seem more like an animal attack. Right, exactly. Yeah, no signs of a weapon. Of course, Inspector VA is like, we have a dead man. It must be him. There are witnesses from the town that say it was some guy. Case closed. But also, they're like, who's the guy? Why did he do that? You know, like, but of course,
that case is like not closed.
Well, Inspector VA is like, I'm not doing a damn bit of work on this. Don't you think I'm going to open this up? The cops leave, and Dr. Hirsch goes to see David and says, don't worry, you'll get your full memory back. Like, you'll remember what actually happened. Maybe you're in your trauma, you're sort of inventing a story. Because it would be so horribly attacked by a human. It's almost like a wolf. Like, sure, a wolf, that's part of the natural world. To have a man do this, insane. And David's like, my memory is fine. My sanity is what I'm worried about, because you're telling me that what I remember isn't real. I was there. I saw it, you know? And again, when he's sleeping, we see this dream POV of him running in the woods. And this time we see he's naked and he's running through the forest. Yeah. And he spots a deer and he attacks one. He tears into the deer, eating it alive.
Look at us having servants back in the mix on Ruin. We've been back. They were away and boy, are they back.
Harbingers of the natural world. We love to see them. Nurse Alex, we see her visit the children's ward to establish that she's a nice person. She chats with this little boy, Benjamin, who's super cute. And then she comes back to David's room, and they're obviously going to have sort of a flirtation that develops into something. And she knows that he hasn't eaten his lunch. He says, honestly, I'm not hungry at all. But she says, you have to eat something. You have medication you take. You can't take it on an empty stomach. He says, just leave the pills. I'll eat later and take them. And he opens the blinds, and he says, come on. Like, don't make me do this, Nurse Price. And she says, of course, you can call me Alex. And she lifts his little lunch cover and sits down and says, should I feed you, Mr. Kessler? He's like, oh, you can help me, David. So now she's feeding him like a child. And obviously there's something happening, you know, like there's a romantic interest. And it's basically airplaning food into his mouth in his hospital bed.
I'm so romantic.
And we see, again, a dream. We see him running through the woods. He's now clothed. He's got his jacket, his backpack clothed like he was at the beginning of the film. And he stops behind a tree and he sees himself in a hospital bed in the woods being tended to by Alex. And then we reverse on his face and he snarls, his eyes yellow, his teeth long and pointy. It's sort of his animal self coming to meet his human self. Like, his this other part of version of him is now reuniting mentally with himself. Back in reality, David tells Dr. Hirsch, I'm having nightmares. And also, in case I didn't say it enough, Jack was killed by a creature. And Dr. Hirsch says, oh, you're getting out tomorrow. Could you please remain sane until you leave the hospital? Which, again, is how I think they still do it now. But in the 80s, I think they were like, please don't make me
Don't make me do this.
I'm begging you, don't make me
do my job.
Just lose your faculties after you leave. You know?
Check out. Let me be like, good to go. And then you can go nuts.
Right. And then I'll act surprised. Like, I didn't know you were having mental problems. And then it'll be a whole thing, you know? And Dave says, could someone just come sit with me? I'd just really rather not be alone right now. I feel really, you know, I don't know who I am right now.
Yeah.
So they send in Nurse Alex and she reads to him while David sort of dozes off. When he wakes up, he says to her, you know, you're a very beautiful girl. She doesn't reply to that. She's like, okay, we all know I'm on the clock here. But she said, I could read you from a Connecticut Yankee in King Arthur's Court. And she reads him a passage from that. Later, David watches The Muppets, in which Frank Oz, is also voicing Miss Piggy. So it's cute that he's in there, you know, also as the Muppets. We see David back at his parents' house. He's doing schoolwork. And we see his younger siblings. Again, they're like 10 and 12 or something. And there's a tremendous knock at the door, Allison. And his father answers, and bursting into his parents' home is a cadre of werewolf assassins dressed how I think people dressed in World War I. Like the metal helmet, green, you know,
uniform. Not fatigues, but like a military costume. Yes.
They bust in and they had the faces of snarling werewolves and they gun down his family set fire to his home, and finally grab David and slit his throat. Of course, he wakes up in bed gasping.
Naturally a dream.
And Alex is there still reading. He says, I just had this horrible nightmare. She says, well, you know what? I've just a thing. And she goes over to open the blinds to let in the sunlight now that it's morning again. And of course, what she does behind the curtains is a werewolf dressed like it's in the trenches, and which stabs her through the heart with a gigantic blade. David wakes up again. Of course, a double dream, a classic double dream.
Classic double dream.
And the orderly is stopping by with breakfast. When David, he tries to eat it, it's the spoon is just basically glue, and he puts his spoon in and it stands up vertically.
Ugh.
And when David looks up, he sees the ghost of his dead friend, Jack, covered in blood, his throat torn out, jacket ripped asunder. And Jack's ghost points at David's breakfast tray and says, can I have a piece of toast? Allison, what would you do?
What would you do?
I think I would have to get out of that hospital and go live with the wolves.
Oh, okay.
Just
leave. Might as well just throw in the towel.
Yeah, I don't think there's that, like, also, like, I'd be like, send me back to America.
Yeah.
Where weirdly, maybe there was slightly better, like, at least, like, maybe I'd be with my family, somebody would understand me, like, get me out of this place.
Right, at least if you're outside the hospital, maybe you could find someone who believes in it, a local librarian, someone who runs an occult bookstore. You know, you got
to
get your hands on someone like that.
And be like, okay, yes. Let's talk about what happened here, because, like, clearly you're all hiding something. But, like, yeah, I would, like, no longer rely on the, like, professionals at that hospital. And once things really start going from bad to worse, I would just embrace the werewolf stuff and be a
lean
werewolf.
In. And that's what Lean In was about, I assume.
Yeah. She was like, just howl at the moon and demand equal pay or something. Ruined is brought to you by Factor. It is so hard to plan and prepare and eat healthy meals every single night of the week, but I'm super excited about Factor. You get every meal is fresh, never frozen, and is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. You can choose from a weekly menu of 35 options and more than 60 add-ons every week. I mean, this is exactly what I need. It's spring. I want to do stuff. I want to stay fueled, but I don't want to waste any time preparing or shopping or doing any of the stuff that it is to feed yourself as an adult.
Absolutely, and I feel like we've all had the experience of, like, getting home and being like, oh my God, I can't cook an entire meal. So for me, Factor is a great option in terms of, like, having food there, like having food on hand. It's also me not wasting groceries. You know what I mean? You can imagine, you see what I'm like on the pod. You can imagine what my fridge looks like. In this way, I have prepared meals ready to go. They're healthy. They are waiting for me.
And it's great because you can customize your weekly meals with as much or as little as you need. So, like, if you're going to be eating out a lot, you can do fewer. If you're, like, in a kind of a vegan mode, you can do vegan. And you can pause and reschedule deliveries all to just suit your lifestyle. And they're celebrating Earth Day all month long. So look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for the lowest carbon footprint meals.
Head to factormeals.com/ruined50 and use the code ruined50 to get 50% off your first month plus 20% off your next month. That's code ruined50 at factormeals.com/ruined50. 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
Save big money and start your spring project with help from Menards. We offer a huge selection of body plants, veggies, and herbs to plant at home and grow yourself. Right now, all 4.5-inch body plants are on sale through May 5th. Head to the Menards Garden Center to get your garden growing and check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
David, of course, assumes, okay, great, it's a triple dream. All right, I'm still in the dream. But Jack says, you know, I was surprised at how many people came to my funeral. Debbie was there. She cried a lot. But then afterwards, she ended up sleeping with Mark Levine, and I fucking hate that guy.
Yeah, we all hate Mark.
David's, of course, like, okay, so this is a dream. I'm going crazy. Jack says, I'm just going to say it. We were attacked by a werewolf. I was murdered. Because it was an unnatural death, I will wander the earth as the undead, as a spirit, until the werewolf's curse is broken. How do you break it, Allison? Great question.
Was just
unfortunately
wondering.
The last link of the werewolf's bloodline must be broken. And he says to David, who again is horrified, silent, you're going to have to, when you're going to turn in the next full moon, which is this week, because he's been out for weeks.
Okay.
You know, unconscious for weeks. The new full moon is almost upon us. You will kill people. The undead surround me, so I will know. And the undead are so boring, and I cannot stand this anymore. So you have to kill yourself before you kill someone else.
So, like, if the werewolf had not gotten to David and had just killed the other guy, werewolf bloodline ended?
No, that Jack would just be an undead spirit forever, I think.
But the werewolf
you're right.
That killed him.
Jack would have died. You're absolutely right. Jack would have died.
Yeah.
So because the werewolf passed the curse on to David, David is obligated morally in this case to die. David, of course, starts sobbing to this. There's a lot of information to take in. But Jack tells him, please don't cry. But beware the moon, David. And Alex runs in and says, what's going on? Why are you crying? And David grabs her and kisses her and says, I'm a werewolf. And she says, will you be okay when you're discharged tomorrow? Bitch, no.
No. Like, no.
He just kissed you and screamed, I'm a werewolf.
Yeah, that's not like healthy behavior.
But there again, this is this idea of like, I do think it feels like a idea of mental illness from the past of like, well, you're going to be okay, right? You'll just pretend or something. You'll pull together. It's like, well, that's not what's going on here.
At all.
Best case scenario, he's having a mental crisis brought on by being attacked by, in your mind, something. A lunatic and murder. See his friend murdered horribly.
Right. That man alone needs is enough therapist. To send somebody into a psychosis, I am sure.
Right. So it's like, oh, are you going to be okay? I'm obviously not. I'm not under the impression of a fucking werewolf. Be. Yeah. David says, my friend Jack was just here. I'm going to turn into a wolf on the full moon. That's in 2 days. And Alex says, okay, let's look at this rationally. Do you think maybe because of all the trauma you've been through, you said you've been having horrible dreams. Isn't it possible when you talked to him that was a dream too? It was very vivid, but it wasn't real. You had a horrible trauma. It makes sense that your brain is trying to figure it out. And David starts to be calm by that. He's like, you know what? That makes more sense than what I was thinking, which is that Jack is undead and I have to kill myself because I'm a werewolf. So I like your version better. I don't want to have to do that other stuff that Jack said I had to do. And Alex says, do you have a place to stay in London? And she asks him if he wants to stay with her, and boy, does he. I just don't think this is the move, gal.
No, there's other men out there. There's other unhealthy men out there.
Plenty of them.
There's so many. Everywhere. You don't need this werewolf.
I also think it's like you could date this guy, maybe have him stay in a hostel, and then you could get coffee, and then see how he's doing with the werewolf stuff tomorrow or in 2 days when he thinks he might be turning into a werewolf.
See what your relationship is outside of the hospital.
You know, look, as a lesbian, we have a proud tradition of U-hauling, so I'm sympathetic. Yes, if I met a woman that kissed me and said she's a werewolf, would I have her move in with me? Yeah. I mean, almost certainly I would, and I would, I would face the consequences, I'm sure. So this is not a judgment on her character, obviously. But when he's discharged, they head to Alex's house. They take the subway, which is full of punks that are, like, smooching each other. And they notice David sort of makes a face to make Alex laugh, and all these punks look at him. And it's kind of like, it's shot in London, so, like, you see Piccadilly Circus, like, the tube. Yeah. So it was kind of fun, you know, to see a horror movie shot on a soundstage for once was nice. And they get to her place, and she walks them through. Great place. Oh, the idea that she could afford this on a nurse's salary.
Oh, movies. It's
gorgeous. And she also has like, she likes Mickey Mouse. So they have like Mickey Mouse figurines. I'm like, oh, I like that they thought of something for the character. Like, that's so cute to me.
I miss.
Whenever you see that.
Set design, you know?
Yes, set design. My God. It just like, please develop the characters. Yes. You know what I mean? Like, even that was like, great. I see her in her old, her gigantic laptop computer with little Mickey Mouse. Great. I love it.
Yes. You know?
And so she's really nervous and they get to her place. She's like, oh, okay. So there's only one bed, you know? And she says, well, you know, I've had 7 lovers. 3 of them were one-night stands. I don't know what I'm saying. Wow, do you want to watch TV and I'll take a shower? Of course, cut to them making out in the shower to the song Moon Dance. Like, they immediately get to it.
Great song.
And we see them in bed. We see, like, a full love scene. We see, like, David kissing his way down her stomach. And later they're cuddling up and Alex falls asleep. David, of course, is awake, probably on account of his concern that he will turn into a werewolf and start killing people.
This does seem like if the werewolf wasn't murderous or dangerous, this is the best case scenario of like not having to choose between a boyfriend and a dog. Like just kind of
best of both
best
worlds.
Best of both worlds.
So David gets up to go pee, and when he looks in the bathroom mirror, he closes the medicine cabinet. He sees Jack behind him in the mirror. Naturally. He's even more decayed. He's sort of turning green. His flesh is starting to rot off in the mirror. David says, you're not real. I went through a trauma. But Jack says, don't be a putz. I'm obviously real. They go into the living room and Dave says, Alex is asleep. Be quiet. And Dave said, okay, you came to visit me. Now, would you please leave? Jack says, I am so sorry I'm upsetting you, David. I really am. But tomorrow is the full moon. You will become a monster.
Yeah.
You have to kill yourself, David, before it's too late, or you will kill people. Dave says, are you really dead, Jack? Like, are you just visiting me? I don't understand what's going on. Like, I think you're not real. You're just part of this bad dream, but I can't contextualize what's going on. And Jack says, believe me, you will kill and you'll make others like me. And I am not having a nice time here. And he describes where he's at as limbo. So sort of like it's him and the other spirits that are caught between worlds, okay. Right? He wants to be able to die and move on, but he's stuck here wandering the earth, yes. Right? And David gets upset. He's like, I won't be threatened by a walking meatloaf. And he does sort of have a meatloaf-like yes, texture at yes. this point. Alex comes out Bumpy. And says, are you okay? And he says, I don't think so. And again, he's very honest about where he's at, which I think is all you could do in this scenario. Like, he's Truly. Been very upfront. I think I'm turning into a werewolf. Yeah, I just saw my friend.
There's no, like, if when everything kind of, like, comes apart, she can't be like, I had no idea.
Yeah, you knew everything. You knew soup to nuts what was going on with this guy. And I was like, she really has that, like, I don't know. I think of it like white knight syndrome or like
yes.
taking care of baby birds, but specifically the female version of it where it's like, oh, this guy really needs my help. It's like, yeah, but now you're already fucking, right? Like, so it's like a man who's clearly in distress that you could be helping him with in a platonic way.
Yes.
And now you're sleeping with him. So your judgment is going to get line. Real yeah. cloudy. Yeah. You're setting yourself up for surprise what's going to happen. And they go back to bed and David says, you know, my friend Jack was here. And do you believe that? And she says, I believe you are really upset. And he says to her, did you ever see the old wolf man with Bela Lugosi and Lon Chaney? Lon Chaney's dad in the movie has to kill him. I think a werewolf can only be killed by someone who loves them. Mm. And Alex says, I'm torn between feeling very sorry for you and finding you terribly attractive.
Oh, girl, what a brutal combo of feelings girl, to have.
Yeah, you are in for it. Meanwhile, we see Dr. Hirsch having kind of been blown off by the cops. You know, Dr. Hirsch was like, we do have to look into this. Like, it does seem weird. And even the one cop, McManus, thought it was strange. So Dr. Hirsch gets in his car and drives up to the slaughtered lamb. So he's like, I will ask these people who saw them there that night, ask what's going on. Did you know this guy? Were there wolves in the neighborhood? Like, give me more context, right? And he walks into the pub, and it's only our three major players. The barmaid is working, obviously, and he orders a Guinness. And we see the darts player is playing darts, and then the guy who told the airplane joke is there. Great. And he starts to sort of like, hey, crazy about the Americans that were here last month, right? Like, that's crazy. So and crazy. They all go, we didn't hear about that. Talk about what you're going to say if somebody comes.
Yeah, you guys, especially if, like, they were, you don't get a lot of outsider. Like, you're none of you are good actors. So, like, you got to figure out what you're doing.
Get on the same page, bitch. And you're trying to tell this guy, oh, two people were attacked and a man's throat was ripped out by some
and you
guy.
Didn't
that's
know
all you
about
would be
it?
Talking about. If that happened like, in my right, neighborhood, like, that's all we'd be talking about.
Right. Like, you're in a more remote area. It's a pretty, like, you know, close community. Like, you would only talk about this. You would all know about it.
And at this point, I kind of also felt like, why not tell him there's a werewolf? Like, I don't understand what is the point of protecting the werewolf.
Right. It's like, don't you want the werewolf lineage to end?
Also, if you know that that guy is still, that David's still alive, wouldn't you be concerned that he would become, you have the werewolf
information. That he would come and kill you. Yeah.
What's the validity? Yeah. Why I hide it, right? And Dr. Hirsch sees also the pentangle on the wall and says, oh, what's that? And the barman's like, oh, that's been there for 200 years. We keep needing to paint over it. But by now it's tradition. So we don't know what that means. We don't know. It's certainly not some sort of protective emblem to protect us from the werewolf. It's certainly not something
not
like
at
that.
All.
The darts player puts on his coat and says, I'll be back. I want to go check on the dogs. And here I wrote, if there's a werewolf, you have to tell somebody.
You have to tell somebody.
You're morally obligated to tell this guy there's a werewolf, right?
Right. Like, and then it's up to him to decide if he wants to take that seriously or not. But at least you need to share that information.
Right. You have werewolf information. You got to share werewolf information.
Absolutely. If you see something, say something.
Say something, especially if it's a werewolf.
Yes.
Dr. Hirsch says, well, you know, thanks for the beer. Do you have food I could order? And Barbara says, there's no food here. And the joke teller says, there's nothing for you here, sir. It's like, bitch, he's going to find out there's a werewolf because now there's a werewolf in London or about to.
Yeah.
So the doctor, you know, sort of gets the hint and he drinks his beer before leaving. And of course, now it's raining outside again. Hirsch goes to walk to his car, but he turns and he sees the darts player like sort of gesturing him over to there's a church cemetery next to the bar, like you have in one of these towns.
Nothing makes me more comfortable drinking than a cemetery.
And the darts player kind of like waves him over like, I got to talk to you about something, right? And the darts player looks around and says to Hirsch,
there's something wrong with this place.
That much I understand.
Yeah, no, I picked up on that real quick. Don't worry about that. But the darts player says, look, David is in danger, and he will be a danger to others tomorrow because that is the full moon. But he doesn't get anything else out because the joke teller comes out of the pub and screams at the darts player and says, that's enough. Don't tell me anything else. And the darts player, like, runs off in the rain. But Dr. Hirsch has enough to be like, okay, so is this real? Or at least these people think it's real.
And that's enough to, like, go on something.
100%. Yeah, exactly. So back in London, it's like the afternoon. Alex is going into her shift at the hospital and tells David, please take your medication. I'll be back around midnight. And this is the night of the full moon. So he's going to be alone when the full moon comes up, Allison.
Yeah.
We also see David, like, walks her out to the front. And we see a dog going absolutely nuts at him. So apparently dogs hate him already.
Okay, not great.
Dogs hate this one weird werewolf.
Mm.
He tries to sneak back. He ends up locking himself out. He has to go and, like, open one of the windows. So we see a cat hissing at him. And he finally gets back inside, and he's watching TV, and he's kind of becoming more and more agitated and restless. So he tries to watch TV. He can't sit down. He starts to read a book. He can't read. He looks in the fridge. But he realizes, I'm still not hungry. He hasn't been eating, right? He goes and he heads out the front door. And I think this is the only part of the movie I did like, because, like, obviously they did this just because they realized that werewolves don't have thumbs. So he goes out of the front door, and it's chilly. He has no shoes, and he's, like, rubbing his arms. And he leaves the front door open, and then he leaves the front door of Alex's apartment ajar. You wouldn't do that, especially when it's cold.
You want to do it when it's cold. You want to do it with someone else's home. You definitely want to do it if you came from America, where we're always like, lock all your doors.
No,
you know,
never.
Everybody's like afraid of everything. So
outside of like moving, the idea, at least in New York, like the idea of having, like, now if I had my dorm for a little bit, I feel like whatever. But like to have two doors open, you'd be moving something in and out. To have two doors open for no reason.
Yeah.
What are you doing? Right. Personally. But again, he's becoming more and more agitated. We see Alex in the hospital. She's visiting with that little boy, Benjamin. They laugh. They're having fun. Allison, we see the moon start to rise. She tucks in little Benjamin, and back at the apartment, David is reading a book, and he starts screaming, and he starts sweating profusely, and he howls, I'm burning up, and he tears off his clothes, and he screams, and his hands start lengthening into paws. And we can hear the bones start snapping in his body. And I think this is a really excellent, like, I do think this deserves the Oscar because it looks so incredibly painful, which is scary. Because normally, like, you turn and it's fine. But this is, like, an excruciating physical experience.
Yes.
He screams, help me, please. And his feet start turning into paws. He starts sprouting hair all over his body. He falls to his hands and knees. His teeth become fangs, and his face, then you hear like his skull snapping as his face sort of lengthens into a snout.
Ugh.
And we see the moon rise through the mist, and we hear the howl of the werewolf. Allison, at this point, I gotta ask, who will survive?
Who will survive?
David's gonna die, right? He's our main character. All these names really just don't stick in my brain. And because of that, it will free Alex from his like purgatory kind of like weird limbo phase.
That's Jack. Jack.
Jack. Alex is the woman.
Jack is the dead person. Alex is the woman. Yeah.
Yes. I think Alex will survive, but there will be like some casualties from werewolfing.
People think the new fresh fragrances from Glade are fresher than fresh, like creator Kate.
This Glade Orchid and Neroli candle is so fresh. It's like fresh as watching a sunrise in Santorini. Yeah, I'm going to need more of those.
Explore the new Glade Fresh collection today.
Allison, a couple arrives at Alex's building, and they decide, and if only they hadn't, they're going to sneak around to the back to scare their friends, who is a couple that's inviting them for dinner. And they think this is the funniest thing.
Friends.
And so they have to walk around the building, which requires them to go into the park next to the building. They, of course, are immediately set upon and torn apart by David the werewolf.
Okay. Great.
The couple who's expecting them hear a noise and outside, and they say, oh, those are our friends. The husband goes down to take a look, and he walks into the park, Allison. So right off the bat, we're getting a casualty numbers up, right?
Yeah, we got it. The body count does need, for a werewolf, like, we do need, like, a bunch of, like,
yeah, and as we head into the third act, it's going to be bodies, bodies, bodies. Meanwhile, at the hospital, Dr. Hirsch gets back from his trip and calls Alex into his office and says, do you know where David is? And she kind of sheepishly says, like, yeah, he's at my flat, but I can check on him when I get off. I'm off at midnight.
Yeah.
And he says, I need you to call David immediately and tell him to come here. Meanwhile, we see the guy who was having the dinner party walking around the park. He's got a scotch in his hand. He's like, ha, is that you? Of course, if you hear a sound in the dark in a park,
no.
Horror rule number, I'm going to say 12. Yeah. That is, it's not your friend.
No.
It is never your friend playing a joke on you.
It's never, the best case, it's like a feral animal.
Right. And if it is your friend, unfortunately, your friend has turned into a gosh darn werewolf.
Yes, absolutely.
The man looks down and sees in the grass, Allison, a severed hand.
Okay.
Meanwhile, the phone at Alex's is ringing and ringing. I guess a werewolf can't answer a phone. So even if he was there, he probably wouldn't be able to answer it. Yeah, go ahead.
Is the motive of the werewolf to turn more werewolves in the way that I feel like vampire, like, or is it just to kill lots of people?
It is to eat them,
okay,
as it turns out. They do. That was my question, too. It is addressed. He is consuming their bodies.
Okay.
That's why he wasn't eating earlier. He doesn't eat human food anymore. He just wants flesh. But a great question, because sometimes werewolves, or sometimes vampires eat to turn, and sometimes it's just the blood. So I think we're to think in this werewolf, he's driven solely by his werewolf need to consume human flesh.
Yes, yes.
Hirsch hangs up the phone. He says to Alex, has David been persisting in his werewolf fantasies? And Alex, reasonably enough, says, well, what's going on? Like, obviously, yes, he is. And Hirsch tells her that he went out to East Proctor and discovered that not only were the townspeople being squirrely, the police have misplaced the file of the murder, which they're great at. They're great at America, too. David's wounds were cleaned and dressed before he was sent to the hospital, even though there's no record of him seeing a doctor. And Alex is like, okay, so what are we getting at? What does this mean? He says the townspeople were obviously lying. There were no witnesses. There was no escaped lunatic. And he says, what I believe is happening in East Proctor is a mass neurosis. So if that village thinks a werewolf killed Jack Goodman, why shouldn't David? So Hirsch is still in denial about the biological reality of David's lycanthropy. Okay. But he thinks David, having been horribly traumatized, sort of took on this belief. And if he believes he's a werewolf, who's to say he's not out here doing werewolf shit, including hurting himself and others, right?
Yes.
So I'm saying, great, that seems like a perfectly fine place to get, and then we'll deal with whether or not he's actually a werewolf, which he is, later, right? So they call the police. Unfortunately, down by the Thames, we see some homeless guys worming themselves in a junkyard, and their dog, of course, goes crazy. They let the dog go to investigate, and they hear a howl, and we see David's wolf face snarling out of the dark. So we're up to, this is like five or six people at this point. So he's burning through it. Can we say it again?
Isn't he full yet?
This one, another thing too. I'm like, how many people could? But I guess he is pretty big. Like he's the size of like a tiger. But even then, a tiger couldn't eat five people at once or five.
No,
or six
I don't think so. And like I think about like my ability to like be physical after I eat like a sandwich.
But I guess if you're only eating once a month, so how many sandwiches could you eat if it was sort of an anaconda situation where you're only eating?
I was gonna say snake style. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well.
There's my favorite sequence down on the subway. We see a guy get off the train, and it heads its way down the tube, and he's the only person. So again, like it's almost midnight. There's not that many people out, and he hears from the subway tunnel a howl. Mm. He's no slouch, so he of course starts rushing to the escalator because he's like, I don't know if that's a wolf or a dog or what the person. I'm gonna get the fuck out of here.
Yeah, I don't need answers.
And we have this great scene where he goes down. It's almost like, I think of it like the Bowery subway stops. Like it's a lot of different tunnels.
Yes.
Or not Bowery, Canal Street. Like,
Canal is.
Yeah. Like complicated different levels and stuff. So he's like going up the levels. And we get this great shot where he's alone walking down like a tiled hallway. It's very narrow. And he turns and we then switch the POV of David the werewolf entering the hallway. But we're just seeing the man's reaction, which is negative.
Yeah, I wouldn't think so.
And he's got he drops his umbrella and he's got his briefcase and he's hauling ass. So he's basically trying to outrun a werewolf and he almost does it. He gets to the escalator up to the street and he trips and he falls and all of his stuff flies out of his briefcase.
No, not work.
And he breaks his nose and he turns around onto his back and we get this great overhead shot from the top of the stairs of the werewolf entering the escalator.
Oh.
And again, we know that his time is over. So I believe that's the sixth person. We then cut to the zoo where a fully nude David wakes up in the morning in the wolf enclosure.
Sure. Go home again.
The two wolves have this great scene where the wolves are looking at him and like not clear exactly what's going on. And they kind of come over to investigate him.
Yeah, I do wonder what wolves think of werewolves.
And at this point, he's back to being a man.
Right.
But I imagine they would find them scary, too, because it's basically a gigantic, bloodthirsty wolf. So it's like, oh, you wouldn't want to necessarily mess with that guy, in my mind.
Yeah.
David's able to pull himself out of the enclosure and kind of has to, like, go up over, like, the stone wall at the back of the enclosure to escape. But now he is totally naked in the zoo with people. It's still early, but there's still people in the zoo.
Yeah.
Like, people have started to arrive to it's a rough. You know, so some for the lady or some for the straight ladies and gay men, I suppose. We do get some full frontal nudity, which I was not expecting, as David like has to like scamper through the zoo and hiding behind trees. So in case that's something you were looking for in this movie, full frontal nudity. He accidentally like comes face to face with an older woman, and which I loved. He's like, oh, sorry. And then he hides in a bush and he has to lure a child over because the child has like a bunch of balloons. And the child's like, this is the exact situation I was told about. I'm not supposed to talk to strangers.
No, you are not.
And David just reaches out and grabs the balloons out of his hand and then sprints through the zoo and is able to steal a woman's coat off a bench without her noticing. And the little boy runs to tell his mother, he says, a naked American man stole my balloons, mommy. We see Hirsch.
That's the story.
We see Hirsch gets a paper and a newsstand, and we see the headline, Murder Victims Found Half-Eaten. Obviously, he knows exactly what's going on. We see David waiting for a bus, and he is wearing a woman's coat, no shoes or pants. And
great look.
And the guy behind him is glaring at him, and David goes and turns and says, a lot of weather we've been having, right? Which I just think is a very funny way to put it.
It's very funny.
He gets back to Alex's apartment. She runs over to him and is like, oh, thank God. Like, I don't know what happened. And he says, I think I've lost my mind. I woke up at the zoo. Allison, he has no memory of what happened from the time that he was reading and he woke up.
Until now.
He doesn't know that he killed six people.
That's not great.
Dr. Hirsch calls and Alex says, oh, he's back. He's safe. Don't worry. Because Alex has not read the news yet either. Like, it's early morning. She's just, like, at home nervous, not watching TV. And he says, okay, bring him to the hospital. I'm going to call the cops to meet him and we'll get this sorted out. Hirsch knows that he's killed these people.
Yes.
They go to get a cab, or David gets dressed. They go to get a cab. And as soon as they start going to the cab, he says, did you hear about what happened? Reminds you of the demon barber of Fleet Street, didn't it? And both Alex and David say, what do you mean? He says, well, the murders. Six people were found murdered, completely mutilated. David is no idiot, so he says, pull over, and he gets out, and he starts running through the square, Piccadilly Square, trying to find a cop to turn himself in. He says, Alex, I knew it. I'm a fucking werewolf. They have to put me somewhere. I can't keep doing this, which I think is, like, that's the right instinct.
That, yes.
What else can you do?
That is the right idea. Right.
And I'm also like, okay, if he's normal most of the time, then can't you set up a situation where, like, once a month he gets put in a pen of some sort or a cell, and then...
If he's otherwise human, then, like, just keep track of the full moons, and then you kind of, like...
Right. It's like when you're trying to get pregnant, you have to keep track of your cycle. He just has to keep track of his cycle.
Yes.
And know when he's going to be able. Right. Alex is begging him to stop and saying, we're going to go talk to Dr. Hirsch. We're going to get this all sorted. Don't worry. Because she's still thinking, okay, so I don't know if he did this. And also, he's clearly mentally ill. This is not like, he's not a werewolf. She's seen no evidence of it. But David finds a Bobby and tries to confess to the murders. But of course, Alex tells the cop, like, he's just joking. He's really distressed. His friend was killed. And the Bobby tells him to scram, and David turns to the people in the square and starts screaming, trying to get arrested. Queen Elizabeth is a man. Prince Charles is an F word. Winston Churchill is full of shit. Shakespeare is French. And the cop's like, I can't arrest you for that. You could do whatever you want. You're just being an asshole, you know?
Yeah.
And David runs off, not before he tells Alex, like, I'm sorry, I can't drag you more into this. I have to figure out what to do, but I love you. She's like, oh. But she doesn't say it back. At the hospital, she goes to the hospital and finds Dr. Hirsch, and they're talking to Sergeant McManus, Inspector VA, who are useless Vinny's like, I cannot accept there's a connection between David Kessler and last night's murders. Why?
Why?
Why can't he just be a man who did it?
At least, like, investigate it? Like, not accept it.
Yeah, and he says, we'll find him. It's like, okay, whatever you got to tell yourself, I suppose. And we get this really sad scene, which I did find very touching, where David finds a, you know, very classic British telephone box and calls home. And the only person home is his sister, Rachel, who's the 10-year-old. Aww. And so we just hear his side, but it's really sweet. And he's like, well, will you tell mom and dad that I love them and I love you and Max too? And he's like, no, I'm not being silly. Nothing's wrong. I'm just letting you know that I love you and goodbye. Aww. And he takes out a pocket knife from his pocket and he goes to slit his wrist in the telephone booth, but he can't do it. He can't, you know?
It's tough.
And when he leaves the telephone booth, he sees Jack waving at him across the street in front of a porno theater. And Jack looks like, he basically is like a mummy with eyes and his teeth exposed. So he's like sort of a gray, dark green, desiccated. And he waves David over and walks inside. And David finds Jack in the back row of the sparsely attended porno theater. Again, it's like 10 in the morning. Like I don't know who's there at the porno theater, but you know. Jack says, I'm not going to say I told you so, but I told you so, you schmuck. I told you it's going to happen. And David's like, I don't know what to do. I don't know what to believe. And he says, oh, okay. Well, then I want you to meet some people. This is Gerald Bringsley, and it's the ghost of the man who David killed in the subway, who's still covered in blood, like torn up.
Okay, yes.
And
better shape than Jack.
Yeah. And he's pissed, but he's, you know, because like now Jack caught him up. And David's like, oh, my God, why are you showing me this? You know, why are you doing this to me, Jack? And Gerald says,
this isn't Mr. Goodman's idea. He's your good friend, whereas I am a victim of your carnivorous lunar activities.
That you have left my wife a widow, my children fatherless, and now I am doomed to walk the earth, one of the living undead, until the wolf's bloodline is severed, which, as we know, as Jack has told us, requires death. And he says, you must die, David Kessler. We also meet the other people he killed, Harry Berman and his fiancée Judith Brown, the couple. And they're very funny because they're very high energy. They're like, hello. Like, they're very like, and I do think it's like, well, at least we're still together. I would really appreciate. Versus like, that guy's like, well, you never get to hang out with your wife or kids again. But at least this couple's like, well, we're in the undead together, which would be a real relief.
Yeah.
And then Elf, Ted, and Joseph, the unhoused men he murdered, who are really pissed, but also, again, they're friends, so at least they get to be there together.
Yeah, you would want a buddy in this kind of tenuous afterlife.
And and Jack says, you have to die by suicide. I'm so sorry. And Dave says, I don't know how to do it. I don't know if I could do that. And then they all debate, at a clip of, like, how we should do it. They're like, ooh, pills. Ooh, a knife. What about a gun? You know, they're all throwing it out. Allison outside. Night falls over the Porto Theater.
Oh.
And David starts to change again. Because I thought it was just going to be one night. But apparently it's, how long is the moon full? Is it
just, you think I know that?
How many days is the moon full? Around 3 days.
Okay.
So the idea is like, this is not just one day. It's going to be 2 to 3. Much like your period, it kind of varies, but it looks like it's about around 3 days. So he starts to change again in the porno theater, which is funny because, like, while the porn is like him transforming kind of sounds like the porn, but also kind of sounds like he's just jerking off. And some guy stops in the aisle to look at him. And David looks up and says, run. And we hear his, like, transformation, this bodily wet, like, snapping that mixes with the porno sound effects. And we see his nails bursting from his skin and his teeth erupt from his face. And outside, the ticket booth lady who he interacted with earlier and an usher hear a scream, and the usher runs inside. We see two bobbies sprinting across the square where the ticket lady is running back out, and she says, there's a mad dog inside. There's a creature.
Oh,
it's
no.
tearing everyone apart. One of the cops goes into the theater. Luckily, this time, the only person in this fucking movie that has a fucking flashlight goes in with a flashlight, finds a man's body torn up into wet pieces in the aisle. And he keeps, to me, then I'm going back out and getting more people. But he keeps walking down the aisle with his flashlight, and the beam falls on the face of David the werewolf, eating the entrails of another disemboweled man. Mm. And that's why I wrote, I'm sorry, David, you got to wrap this up. Like, I know it sucks so bad, but you can't
but
just
like,
be out
you
here killing people.
You can't just terrorize London 3 days a month and kill everyone.
And you definitely can't kill people inside a porno theater. I mean, like, who's going to run the country? That's all of our politicians, you know?
I know.
The cop runs out finally and pulls down the metal security grate, which I thought was very quick thinking. So like to trap
Smart.
Him in. And says, there's a monster in there. And of course, because people are stupid, instead of being like, oh, there's a monster in the Porter Theater, I'm going to run the opposite direction. People start running over to find out where the commotion is, right? And the cops are trying to tell everyone to back up, disperse, don't come over here. And more cops pull up, including McManus and Inspector VA. And just as they get to the door, David the Werewolf tears through the metal security grate, lunges out, grabs VA by the throat, and rips his head off. And the inspector's head flies off, hits the hood of a cop car, and then it's just madness. Like, people are running, screaming.
Of course.
David runs in front of a double-decker bus, which, like, has to veer out of the way, and then a car hits that, and that causes someone, a passenger, to fly out through the windshield. But it's complete chaos. Everyone's panicking. Dr. Hirsch runs over to Alex's apartment and wakes her and says there's some incident in Piccadilly Circus involving a mad dog. They both know it's him, right?
Yeah.
So David the Werewolf starts running through the alleys of London. The cops are giving chase. We see a van full of snipers show up that they have, like, special guns or, like, a task force to take out animals. I don't know. So they speed to the scene, and they arrive just as Hirsch and Alex arrive. And to join this crush of cops and onlookers and screaming people and people who try to figure out how do you call your insurance when a werewolf crashes your car? Like, what do you do?
Yeah, kind of tough to know what the next steps are administratively.
Yeah. Allison, the cops are able to corner David the Werewolf in an alley with no escape. And they sort of form a wall where they're going to gun him down. But Alex pushes herself past the wall of cops and runs to the end of the alley. But they wait, of course. They don't want to kill her. And she calls to him and says, David. She finds him cornered and says, they're going to kill you, but maybe I could, let me help you. I love you, David. And we sort of see this look of recognition when she says it back. But unfortunately, Allison, he's a werewolf now.
Yeah.
So he lunges for her. But before he can attack her, the cops shoot him dead.
Yeah.
And the movie ends with Alex standing weeping over the human dead body of David Kessler. The end.
Oh.
I know.
Sad.
Yeah, sad. But a good ending, and also the only honest ending to this movie, right? Where it's like we're just walking like someone into this inevitable trap.
Yes.
If it was an American movie, there'd be some like, oh, we found a potion. Yeah. Nah, you're just a werewolf.
This is just
like, I'm sorry.
This is it.
But then everyone could be free, and the werewolf's curse is over. So that's good, at least.
That's good.
So we got that going for us. Elsa, what are some fatal mistakes you think were made in An American Werewolf in Paris? Oh, my God. An American Werewolf in London. I'm sorry.
Fatal mistakes.
I mean, there's two big ones to me. One is backpacking through Europe as a college student.
Yeah.
And kind of like being like wandering around like that. And the other is the people of that town not being more forthcoming about what's going on with the werewolf situation they're observing.
Unacceptable. That's on them. That, like, is a huge mistake.
That is on them.
They really...
Blood is on their hands.
Absolutely. Both human and werewolf.
Yes.
I agree. And it's also at a certain point becomes sort of baffling, where it's like, what did you think was going to happen? You know this guy survived. You know he was going to another city. You know people were going to find out when he turned into a werewolf. So what's the plan here?
Yeah, tell someone.
Yeah. David did the best he possibly could, and except for, I guess he should have died by suicide. But again, that's really a hard thing to ask of somebody, even if it's a bunch of ghosts asking him. And then where would you put An American Werewolf in London on the spooky scale, Allison?
A spooky scale.
I think this is a 5. I think the, I think the physical transformation is very, like, pain creates, like, horror. So I feel like that's very scary. And I feel like the inevitability of, like, the moon is, like, you can't beat this thing. Like, this is just like, this is it. And the alternatives being somebody has to kill you or you have to kill yourself is not a super fun vibe. what about you?
I'm going to give it a 4, but I really like the tone of it because it is really funny. And, you know, you get like these slapstick moments. But again, like, as we say in all movies, like, you can have bigger, crazier elements as long as it's grounded.
Yeah.
So for me, the comedy was, you know, of a piece with, like, them kind of being jokey college guys. But then also it was grounded in this emotional sadness, you know, both of his relationship with Alex and then also his realization that of where this is headed that I think really earned that you could have sillier, more slapstick moments. While, you know, like when he goes to make, you, as long as you're grounding it against when he goes to make a phone call to his sister, you know, like to me, the tone was really balanced in a very satisfying way. Was it scary? No, but I thought it was really well done for a werewolf movie. Yeah, I'm not running out of town to see a werewolf movie and be scared by it. Like that's just not really
just an enjoyable. On all the, of all of the scary entities, like werewolf is very low on the list for me in terms of scares.
Yeah. Absolutely. But a pleasure nonetheless. And we hope you enjoyed yourself too, everyone. Sorry, this was not an American Werewolf in Paris, but we'll have to do that one.
We'll have to do that one.
And realistically, I bet, I mean, there's a connection to, David Bacon, Kevin Bacon.
No, I do think that like, yeah, there's like, there were, it's like Thomas Everett Scott and like two or three other like actors of the 90s where I'm like, there definitely is a connection. So we could even feasibly do it this month.
Well, and if we do, get ready.
Get ready.
Let's see. And until then, please
keep it spooky. Don't forget to follow us at Ruin Podcast and Crooked Media on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok for show updates. And if you're as opinionated as we are, consider dropping us a review. Ruined is a Radio Point and Crooked Media production. We're your writers and hosts, Hallie Kiefer and Allison Leiby. The show is executive produced by Alex Bach, Sabrina Fonfetter, and Houston Snyder, and recorded and edited by Kat Iosa. From Crooked Media, our executive producer is Kendra James, with production and promotional support from Ari Schwartz, Kyle Sieglin, Julia Beach, Caroline Dunphy, and Awa Okolade.